Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Chris Spitzer, third-generation family member within the public safety field, 34 years of volunteer and career experience, fire chief for Lugoff Fire Rescue in South Carolina. Chris never had intentions of being a fire chief, but in life, you will end up arriving at a fork in the road in which you choose which track you head down. It's either going to be toward breakdown or breakthrough. Chris chose the latter, but with that choice came difficult times, which in return made him the chief he is today, and a chief that firefighters want. Aggressive, blue-collar, and most importantly, one who has never forgotten that he will always remain a firefighter first. With that, I present Mr. Chris Spitzer.
All right. Hey, my name is Chris Spitzer, and I am the fire chief of Lugoff Fire Department, Fire Rescue, and beautiful Lugoff, South Carolina, just 20 miles east of Columbia. So I got into fire service in 1990. High school kid. I think I was a junior that year, and just kind of seeking my way through life, and was interested back then. You know, there was fraternities and things like that nature in high school, and you know, I kind of had a track of trying to want to pursue that just for the simple fact that I wanted to be part of the guys. But at the same time, I had a group of guys, particularly two, that were volunteer firefighters in our local fire department in our community, which was with the Kershaw County Fire Service in a little small area where I grew up called Antioch. And spending time with these guys, I say, hey, you know, maybe you should try becoming a firefighter with the fire department. And at first, I really wasn't interested. I'm a third generation public safety. My grandfather was in Camden Fire Department in the 20s and in the 30s. My father was in law enforcement, and so I'm kind of third generation in public safety. I'll skip the middle part of my father being in law enforcement because, you know, he's a second responder, not a first responder. But what really piqued my interest was I just stopped by one day. They were having a meeting and they encouraged me to come in. And, you know, back then, even at the age of 16 or 17, you could do so much more. You know, they didn't really have a junior firefighter program. You were just brought in basically as a firefighter. Of course, there was a lot of things you could and couldn't do, and it just kind of depended on the leader, the authority having jurisdiction, the fire chief. And Danny, I fell in love with it immediately. I left there that night, and of course, you have to be voted in and all of those processes. So I joined that fire department in 1990, and I worked my way up from just a junior firefighter to eventually I became chief. Over a span of, I guess it was probably 15 years of spending time with them. But during that time, I was already a career firefighter with the city of Camden Fire Department in Camden, South Carolina, which is just right across the bridge from us here in Lugoff. And I still currently reside in Camden. I spent close to 10 years with the city of Camden, and then, I got an opportunity to go to Horry County Fire Rescue as a training captain. And that was a long process, went through a lot of evaluations and assessments and made the cut. And at that time, you know, Horry County was just becoming a fire department combined. They combined EMS and fire in 2001. I came in 2008 and went over to a training division that was currently down to one person. And that one person kind of eventually, you know, went out, and I was in there by myself for just a few weeks. And then I was joined by three guys that just changed my life. Because honestly, Danny, you know, being a training officer was never on my radar. It just wasn't. And one of the reasons why was, I didn't know how much of a passion I would have for that. But I will tell you this before we move any further is it completely changed my life. I was able to see things that would help me eventually become who I am. So, I spent around 6 or 7 years with Horry County, and I had a calling to come back home. And home, I had an opportunity here in Lugoff, also had an opportunity with Columbia Fire Department to move into basically the same position with Columbia in the training division. And I had two offers. And one offer was, of course, with Columbia. And one offer was here at Lugoff for the second in command, which would have been the operations chief. And I weighed out my options, and both opportunities presented themselves at the same time, same day, after all my assessments, after meeting with both departments. And honestly, Danny, it came down to I felt like I wanted to go back to a smaller department. I felt like I could make a bigger impact. Not that we were not making impacts where I was from. Horry County is a large fire department, and many people misconstrue that. Horry County is actually the largest fire department, fire rescue department in the state of South Carolina. So I felt like I could make a pretty good impact as an operations chief in Lugoff. So I joined Lugoff back in 2013, somewhere around that. And I was operations chief, and then I worked my way up, and the current fire chief at that time, in 2017, he got the opportunity to take over as superintendent of South Carolina Fire Academy. He moved on, and I moved forward, and I have been the chief of Lugoff Fire Department since 2017. So over my career span, I went from just being a junior firefighter in my local fire department to becoming a fire chief, essentially. And Danny, I was not prepared to be fire chief. But I put in for that position because I felt like, and of course, I had to go through the process, and I felt like we were heading in the right direction. And I didn't want that to change for the guys that currently work here and were working here then. So, I can remember in just playing out in the yard when I was growing up, and even to the day that I joined that first volunteer fire department back in 1990. We had the old saw blade that turned on the post outside of the fire department. So the fire chief would get there, the first arriving guy would get there, and he would alarm the saw blade. And I can remember hearing that as a child. I could hear it echoing through all throughout the community. That thing would wind up and just, when I joined that fire department, there was six sets of bunker gear on a truck. And it didn't matter if you wore a size 10 or if you wore a size 7. The first six people that got there got the bunker gear. The rest of us, we didn't really have anything. Front mount pumper, yellow. Or what some people call green. I love that color, by the way. And just to see the evolution has changed so much. But that's where I've been. I went from just a small community fire department to where we are now in a rapidly fast-paced growing fire department. And that's it. That's where I'm at. A 30, I guess we're looking at 34 years now combined. Again, don't let the good looks fool you, man, other than just losing all my hair. But let me tell you something. It has been the best 34 years of my life.
With that, with that being said, I'm going to back up just a little bit. So, you joined a volunteer department. I'm sure you probably surrounded yourself with people that you wanted to emulate and whatnot. So, when did you figure out I can do this as a career too? You know what I mean? Because everyone usually gets to start as a volunteer, and then it's like, did somebody tell you, hey, this department's hiring, or was your mindset like, hey, I'm already a volunteer, why not do this full time?
The thing that happened for me was when I jumped in, I mean, I jumped in. It was head first. But at the time, there was no openings currently in our area. And I got married at a young age and was having to support my wife and my daughter who eventually came along. And believe it or not, I went to work first in a underwear producing factory. I was cutting out fabric to make underwear, boxers, briefs, and I was still volunteering. So I would work the midnight shift at that plant. And then I got kind of an opportunity to leave that plant and go to another manufacturing plant, which was FN. And I was working at that plant for the military work in making military weapons and Browning weapons. Well, during that time frame, I was making pretty good money, but a position came open with the Camden Fire Department. And there was two other guys in the county fire service that I knew I was going to be competing with. One was lo was with the local fire department I was with, and the other was with a neighboring station in the same county fire service. And we all three applied, and we supported each other. And fortunately for us, there was two positions that came available with Camden Fire Department, so two of the three got hired. And eventually that third guy did get hired, but I did make the first cut and I went to work for Camden Fire Department in 97, 1997. So, in 7 years, I went from just being a volunteer. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say that. Let me back that up. I went from being a volunteer to being a career guy in a 7 year span. So that's when I knew. Once I joined, and I still remained a volunteer for many, many, many years after becoming a career guy.
Okay. So you got hired at Camden Fire Department. Was it, and I always like that, I always like to ask this question, was it everything you thought it would be, or was it different or more or less?
It was more than what I thought it would be, and it was different at the same time. It was more because I was spending a lot more time learning the processes of a career fire department. I was learning the ins and outs of every truck. I was learning the components of a fire apparatus from A to B. I was fortunate, and this is where I was extremely fortunate, because back then we still had the old guys around. We still had the guys that would put you through a checkout process, and you had to go through your checkout process in a 6 month period. So you would start out as a firefighter and you would ride tailboard, and but after 6 months to a year, you became an engineer and you knew those trucks in and out. Our first out truck at that point, we were responding a small little Ford mini pumper and a 1988 Ford engine. And our backup, the third truck out, was an 86 Mack
Okay.
single cab. And but here's where the biggest difference happened for me, Danny. The biggest difference came when we would complete all of our daily duties. We would do everything we could during the day. We would do all of our busy work. We would run calls. My checkout process started with my captain. Back then, they were lieutenants. We didn't even have captains. Later on, they were moved up to captains. My process started with him at 11 o'clock every night. And at 11 o'clock every night, we would work to 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And that was on every shift for that entire 6 months, 8 months that I was on my probationary period. When that first started, I had so much hate for him. I'm like, listen, man, we had all day for you to do this, and then now you're putting me in this position where I'm just tired. But it was a test, Danny. It was a test to be able to make sure I could do what I needed to do late at night in the wee hours of the morning. And we did that every third day. We worked 24, 48s. Every third day, I knew, and I got acclimated to the point to where I knew at 11 o'clock. And we didn't wait till 11:05. We didn't wait till 11:16 or 10:59. At 11 o'clock on the dot, if we were not on a call, that's when we started my checkout process. And we would work 5, 6 hours into the wee hours of the morning. He'd allow me to get a couple hours of sleep, shower up in the morning, head home, and I'm pretty sure you knew what I was doing when I got home.
Right.
I was going to bed.
Okay, but it seems like having that mentor, that even though, maybe you might not have known it at the time, but I'm sure now you think back and it was like that's what, he was a mentor to you because he was trying to give you the knowledge and, set the tone of what he expected.
You're correct. And those are the things that have put me in the position that I'm in now. So when you go back to those early to mid 90s, that's what shaped me to who I am. I didn't have a father figure in my life. So I looked to those guys that were of age to be my father. And when my lieutenant was not there, and I had a different lieutenant that if my lieutenant had called out or had a day off and I had another lieutenant working, I would say, oh man, I'm gonna get an early shot at going through my process. And they all worked off, every lieutenant worked off of the same book. Now they may tailor it a little bit and I would get different information, and but they would pass it along how I was doing things. So I think I'd catch a break and maybe we'd start at 5 or 6 o'clock, but that every lieutenant there were not, they were not young guys. They were the guys that wanted to be up. They wanted to stay with you. They wanted to have that cup of coffee with you when you were done. And those three gentlemen, because there's three different shifts, those three guys impacted my life to exactly where I am now. And if it wasn't for those three, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I would have saw. I figured I could have probably found another way to make ends meet for my family. Back then I was making $17,000 a year as a firefighter. And looking back on that now, I'm like, man, how did we survive? How did we eat? How did we put food on the table? And we were no different. Every firefighter is a landscaper. Every firefighter finds a niche. And you were just having to find different ways to make your ends meet. But those guys, Danny, they shaped my entire firefighting career early on, and I look to them as father figures, and I still do to this day because I'm able to see those folks.
Okay. And that's something I think we all need. I think, we all need that, even if you don't call them mentors, even though they might not know that's what they are, but we all should have somebody we can go to when we have questions or we need to talk. So, I mean, I love the story.
I had one just stop by the other day. He lives in my district, and he stopped by the other day, and he's lived in Lugoff all of his life, but he retired from Camden almost after 40 years, and he stopped by last Wednesday, and he stopped by during lunch, and during that lunch period, we were looking at some old stuff from the early 90s when we had a train derailment. It just kind of brought back memories for him, and him stopping by for lunch turned into 6 hours. He stopped by at lunch, and I think he left around 4, 4:15, something like that. But we were just reminiscing on the days when things were great, when things were good, when things were almost simple,
Right.
And those are the types of moments that I cherish because you don't get that anymore.
Right. With that being said, since you kind of opened the door a little bit, what do you think, in your opinion, the course of where the fire department is moving to? What's your take on it? Like, everyone always talks back about back in the day, even including myself, because I'll think back how when I joined my volunteer department, how it was and how departments are now. Do you think we're heading in the right direction or are you just unsure?
Well, I think we're heading in the right direction, but that has to be based upon who is leading the direction. So in the fire service now, we all know we're battling staffing issues. We're battling having to compete with other departments that are local, that are competitive. Competitive pay is something that is a driving force. But it takes a special person not to want to just jump ship. We're 20 miles from Columbia. Columbia is a big department. My brother's a battalion chief of Columbia. And, for a while, a lot of people were leaving to go to Columbia because they wanted that. They wanted to run all the calls. They wanted to stay up all night. But here's where we are. It's a generational thing, right? And I don't mean that we had generations. We have generations, and then we're going to have to focus on the future generations. We're split generations within our own organization. We may have Gen X and Gen Z or millennials, whatever you want to call them. And I don't like to call them that because I have the mindset that we are responsible to make sure that we are putting millennials or that type of generation into the roles that they need to accomplish, the roles that they need to play. They need guidance. So every month I change. We're west of Camden, and everything that we do here is called the Pride of the West Side. And I'll change in every location within this fire department, just at headquarters. There's 12 different points of where I put that monthly reminder of who you are, where we're going. But, talking, and I hate to revert back to the day, but Danny, back in the day, a 4 or 5 year gal was just a young Jake. They were not, they were still considered young, fresh. That 4 or 5 year guy now could have joined the fire service 4 years ago, and he's already made it to captain. Some issues already made it to battalion chief. But the generation is split. And as myself as an older guy, and our assistant chiefs and our battalion chiefs, some are young and some are old, and we have to split that difference. And enabling ourselves to do that has allowed us to intertwine and interweave to where we can focus on what they're providing, and we can focus on what we're providing. And you put those two things together, and it can work, and it does work. The issue is we have to make sure we understand each other. And if we don't understand each other and where we're coming from, then the game is lost. We've lost the game before we ever hit the field. So I do believe that 10 years ago, the fire service was in a scramble. We were trying to figure out how we were going to handle the younger generation. We were trying to figure out how we were going to hire, how are we going to retain these folks? How are we going to retain our people? What's our retention rate going to be? What is the incentives we can allow to keep these guys? And what has happened is we have figured out a way to where we have these generational gaps have closed. Because we have to make sure that we are providing the information they need as well as the information that we need as command staff. And again, if you go back to command staff, I mean, I got a battalion chief right now. He's in his late 30s. I've got guys testing for lieutenant, they're in their mid 20s. So actually, let me take that back. That battalion chief that I got now, he's in his mid 30s. Again, I don't want to focus on the past, but in the past, I was an engineer,
Right.
so we had to bridge those gaps. And by bridging those gaps, it has worked for us. I do hear that, in other agencies, especially large agencies, there is a problem with the generational gap, but it all comes down to your company officer level. It comes down to who is willing to put into work to make sure this guy, the new guy, the middle guy, that they're all getting what they need to be successful in this organization. These guys don't join the fire department for the money. It's in their heart. It's not in their pocket. Those are the people that are going to stay with you. Those are the people that we've bridged that gap and it worked. And if that don't take place, then again, like I said, we've lost the game.
No, definitely. Well said. Well said. With that being said, can you tell us or tell the audience about Lugoff, the size, station, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature?
Yes, we We have three stations here in Lugoff. We're looking to put on a fourth station. We have seen a huge boom in population because we're so close to Columbia. So you have a lot of people that work in the Columbia area that want to kind of get out of that and move, a little bit further east. And our population growth is just, it has boomed over the last 5 years. And it has put our fire marshals in a state of panic because they're having to review and look over so many things. We currently have about 55 guys on the roster. Career folks, we're right at 25 part-timers, which our part-time folks are phenomenal. And when I say part-time, they work a 24-hour shift. They're coming in and they're working and they're supplementing our paid staff that's on duty. We have a myself, then we have an assistant chief, then we have a battalion chief over training and special ops. We serve a population here of about 25,000 people. That's during after hours. We have a lot of industry here, so during the daylight hours or during working hours, we're pushing 60, 65,000 people that come in just to our district. We're only 53.8 square miles of district, so we have a lot of industry here that brings in a lot of folks during the day. We have I-20, which is a major artery for the state. We have Highway 601 and Highway Number 1. Highway 1 runs from here to Texas. We have a lot of major arteries here. We roughly average about 15, 16 calls a shift. Not too bad, but a lot of those are medical related. We're in that same position as everybody else. We're running more medical calls than we are anything else. Car accidents, just, our guys they're putting on extrication gear a lot more than they're putting on bunker gear. But we're growing, and we're growing at a pace that where it's hard for us to keep up. And we're looking at, the issues with tax increases to be able to support this. And one thing I'll give you just an example of, we posted online last week that we were hiring part-time firefighters. So we posted that in the middle of last week. Well, we had to take it down by Friday. By Friday, we had so many applications that we can no longer accept anymore. So the post only stayed up for 2 days. Well, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And we had to shut it down Friday because we just had such a high influx of applications. And that's a good problem to have,
Right, especially
because
now. Yeah.
absolutely. So we're just a booming area. We're growing. I see our growth just expanding to the point of where, we may even have to add a fifth station before it's over with. So if we can knock out this fourth station, get it built, then I think we'll be in pretty good shape for the future. I don't, I could have retired 5 years ago. I'm just kind of hanging around because I'm in a good place. I'm with good people. And this is probably the best time I've had since being a battalion chief. So, or even a captain. We're growing and we're handling it accordingly, just to the best that we can. The abilities that we have great apparatus, we have great equipment. So we're fortunate in that area.
One thing you kind of mentioned earlier, you stated how you were with Horry County, and then you went, so you've had the experience of being on a huge municipality down to a small. In this day and age, some firefighters feel like if they're not a part of a big city, they're not really a fireman. And to each his own on their opinions. But what's your take on big municipalities compared to a small two or three station department?
One of the things that guys look at is, they visit YouTube way too much, and they see, things that go on in different departments, and especially the larger departments. And in larger departments, of course, when you look at large departments, and it's no, I'm not downing any large department, but within that large department, you have different cliques, you have different areas. And also in that large department, you have hate. There's issues between this company, this station, this battalion, this battalion. And it becomes an issue to where you don't even know who you're working with at some point and at some time. Also in those larger departments, it does and can create a lot of opportunities for you, but it comes down to who you know. It comes down to what are you doing and what have you done for me lately to be able to get to this point from, and that is no way, shape, or form an indication of how Horry County is running, because that is a fabulous fire department. They have made leaps and bounds, and it is just a great, great organization. But when you come down to the smaller departments, you're seeing these guys every day. You're going out, you're stepping out of the office. And I had the opportunity to be able to do that because I can step out on the floor and I can see these guys when they're here. And for me, the biggest thing is the culture that you can create, and it stays immediately within the 53.8 square miles that we serve. Horry County is roughly 1,200 square miles, largest county east of the Mississippi on the eastern seaboard. So, again, it's a tough battle in that larger organization as opposed to the smaller organization. But with that, when you know you're working in a smaller organization, I used to have guys that would that was working here that was traveling an hour and a half to come to work, one way. Most of those guys are gone because they had to find something locally for them that would work for them. But it takes a special individual to work for a local fire department that's serving their community, because at that point, they're no longer looking to, run 15 calls a night, staying busy where they can't even get their apparatus checks done, or whatever the case may be, not getting their workouts in and all of those things. But there's also a true fallacy too, is it's a double-edged sword, because when you work for your local fire department and your local organization, every time you leave out this bay and you head out to that call, there's a good chance you're going to know who you're responding to. You're going to know a family member. You may even know the person that is involved. And to me, it takes a really special person to be able to handle that, because that can affect them in a way that it affects every first responder, but on a different level, because you have an immediate reaction to, I'm connected to this person in some way, shape, or form. And we see that a lot. So it's almost a strain. It's a strain on these guys. And a lot of times we're having to do debriefings because we see a lot here in this small area that we serve. We have definitely dealt with more than what we deserved. But the other side of that is, it's committing yourself to this community, is committing yourself to the organization that you're serving. And to me, that's just phenomenal. Even though I live in Camden, I have a 5-minute response from my house to my district. So it just, we serve the people that ultimately pay our salary.
All right.
So, of course, we have to deal with people that are traveling on these major arteries, and but that doesn't change who we are. What changes who we are is the commitment level that we provide for this community. And after my time in the larger departments, it just felt right to be in a smaller department. It felt good. It felt like I can make an immediate impact. And it's kind of worked out. So I commend every person here because they're here for their community genuinely. They're not here for their career. I guess it really comes down to each individual mindset. Do you want to serve your community, or do you want to serve yourself as somebody that is just wanting that job, you wanting that experience, you want to run, everything you could possibly run. You want to get salty, But that mindset quickly changes, you know, because when staffing is so low, you can get salty in a small organization, you know. You don't have 15 guys waiting outside for you for rehab. You know, most of these guys, when and that's why we have the program we have that they have to work out on is, you know, they come out of a burning building, they know they're going to get 2 or 3 minutes of rest and they're going to be back in there. And, you know, that's just the mindset that we have. And, you know, we're fortunate. We've signed an automatic agreed aimment, automatic aid agreement with, for the first time in the history of this county, with the city of Camden and every station in Kershaw County. So we have more available manpower now than we've ever had before, which is presenting a problem because now I'll revert back. You do have 15 guys waiting and they're all jumping. They're ready to get in. And for our people, what we've had to teach them is now you have endless resources. Now you have to figure out how you're going to task those resources because you're not looking at the same guy anymore saying, hey, you need to pack back up and go in. So we just entered into that back in June. So it's working out really well for us. And we're fortunate now because we're providing manpower for these municipalities around us as they are for us.
I got a two-part question. The first part of the question is, at what point did you decide you were ready or you wanted to be fire chief? And when you got that opportunity, how did you form the culture that you have now?
Well, the way I looked at it was, I really was apprehensive about going after the chief's position after Chief Ray retired or went on to as superintendent. My biggest concern was I didn't want to see what we had in the work that we put in get totally changed and annihilated by an individual that may come from the outside. We worked so hard to get to where we were. And, you know, in that time, all I could think about was the guys that work here and the girls that work here, you know, our family, the families of the firefighters. That decision was probably the toughest decision I had to make. It was about a 3 month process, really trying to figure out if it's what I wanted to do because, you know, I never thought about going higher than battalion chief. I really didn't. I didn't have an interest, Danny. I did not have an interest in being a fire chief. But at the same time, you know, I just could not get that thought process out of my head of the folks that work here and where we were heading. So once I became chief, in all honesty, the first 2 years was extremely tough on me. I had a lot to learn. I had a lot to deal with. You know, I went from just filling out reports, doing general paperwork on run calls, keeping up with training, those types of things, to just dealing with everything you could possibly deal with. One of the toughest things for me was, you know, at the end of the day, Danny, before we go any further, I want you to understand I'm a blue collar fireman. If you see the shirt I got on, I don't have on a white shirt.
Not correct.
I have on a dark blue shirt. It just says fire chief, has some rank on it. I'm a blue collar guy. I grew up on the floor. I started at the bottom and I worked to the top. And for me, learning how to be a politician and being a fire chief at the same time was extremely tough. I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. I don't hide it. I don't try to impress when I'm meeting with politicians and county councilmen, and you know, I'm governed by a board of commissioners. I don't beat around the bush. I'm a guy that's going to tell you straight up how I feel and what we need to do to keep our department going in the right direction and what we need to do for the people that work here. It was a tough battle for those first 2 years, and in all honesty, those first 2 years, I was right at eligibility for retirement and I really contemplated it. You know, I would go home and talk with my wife and in a lot of days. There were back then, there was more tough days than there was good days. And I would talk with my wife, who was my confidant. I've been married 31 years to a fabulous, fabulous lady who has supported me in every way, shape, or form. But she's my confidant, and I can talk to her. And she told me, she said, "Chris, if you give up now, what are you giving up? And is it worth giving it up and not battling?" And it wasn't an issue, Danny, of the guys. They brought me in, and they were very receptive to everything that I did. And budgeting, handling the budget, that was the toughest thing for me because, man, when I was in high school, I failed out of pre-algebra. So now here I am, I'm looking at a pre-algebra as a senior. Here I am looking at, multi-million dollar budget and trying to figure it out. So I was kind of self-taught in that area, but here's where I changed my mind. I changed my mind when I knew that we were heading in the right direction. We were staying on that path that we created when I was operations chief. And getting beyond the paperwork, the politics, the budget, it opened my eyes up to who's here, why they're here, why they're staying with me. They could have left. They easily could have left. There's other opportunities in other places, but they chose to stay. They chose to stay with me. And that was my deciding factor. Was these guys had a commitment in me, and I couldn't let them down. It weighed heavy on me. And making that decision to where I am now, I'm just in a great place. I'm in a comfortable place. I'm in a place to where I feel like everything that we do is for the people, is for our internal customers, is for our external customers. And I've had complete buy-in and support from every person here. And, I try not to separate myself too much from the guys, but you do have to at some point. But the way they stuck with me, I owed every bit up until this point, and I still owe it to them to continue. And there's things I want to get accomplished. There's things, that fourth station. We just ordered another apparatus. We are taking a big venture here. We're fixing to put on a medic unit. And that's going to be a big step for us in the future. We're going to have the first walk-in rescue in this county. We run a heavy rescue now, but it's not a walk-in. So there's things that excite me. There's things that have brought me back to when I was younger, or just all the way down to the apparatus orders we're doing. And I find myself now because, in the fire service, they tell you that, in your first 10 years is great. It's a great job. And then you reach a plateau about between the 9 and 15 year mark. And after you reach that plateau, it's like, well, is it fight or flight? And for us in South Carolina, retirement is for me, it's 25 years. For these guys, younger guys, it's 28 years now, unfortunately. But then you reach another level according to studies. And of course, everybody can throw out a study. According to studies, after that 15-year mark, you hit another high mark. You hit a mark that says, "Hey, I want to stay." And then you hit another low right before retirement. And that's when you have to make your decision. Are you going to retire or are you going to stay? And that's like a 50-50 shot. For some folks, they're ready. They're ready to move on. Man, I'm just now 50 years old. I got a long life ahead of me. Why not stay? Why not continue to do what I'm doing? Continue to do what I'm loving. Continue to provide for the folks that work here with me in this fire department. To me, it simply comes down to what we are accomplishing and the people I get the opportunity and the privilege to work with every day.
Which is well said, because a lot of some people don't really know like what the fire chief does. You know what I mean? Because it's like we know that individual's there, but we don't know the battles that you fight for us. When it comes to like city council, town council. Because you have a boss too. Like it's not just because I'm the fire chief. You have a boss that you have to also respond to. But it's nice to hear that you've never forgotten your roots, because unfortunately, we have individuals when they get to that top tier position, they tend to disconnect and disconnect very hard from the people that work for them. Where I look at it as the fire chief should always have that mindset of, yes, you hired all the individuals that that are on your department, but you ultimately kind of serve them and should make sure that they're, in the right headspace, that you're providing everything you can for them.
And that is a very good statement. And most people don't understand that there is a domino effect of every decision you make within this the walls of this office. And you know what? It is not their responsibility to completely understand. It's my responsibility to have them understand. I can't make them understand, but I can present it in a way that they need to understand why we made a decision. I can't do that all the time because there's things that they are privileged to know, and there's things, and I'm completely transparent on every shape that I can possibly, especially with my chief officers and my company officers. And you know, I take that information, I give it to them, and they can relay that to their staff. But I will be honest with you, Danny, I have no respect for a fire chief that does not connect with their people. That has always been a big a mindset for myself. I don't care if you're in a 500 member department or 1500 member department. As a chief, you have to step away from the walls of this office. You may not get to visit every station. You may not get to visit every person, but you have to put yourself out there to be accessible. If you don't relay that to your people, then all you are is just a guy that is sitting in upper management, acting as a CEO of an organization that can't run like a business. And a lot of times I hear fire chiefs relate to themselves as a business-oriented fire chief. Well, that's unacceptable to me. A fire chief is a CEO, but it's not in a company. We're not working for Microsoft. We're not working for Dell. We're not working for, these large companies. We are working for the people that work directly under us. We're working for the community. If we don't invest our time into these folks, there's so many other avenues they can take. There's so many other ways that they can make ends meet, that they can go out and make far more money. If you cannot put yourself out there in a position to where they can trust you, where they can come to you, my door stays open all day, every day, unless I'm in a meeting or unless I'm talking with Danny B. So if that door's open, it does not matter what I have in front of me. It does not matter what I'm dealing with that day. I'm going to make time for these guys. Now, it's easier said for me because I'm in a smaller department. But if I do not show these guys that they are 100% of everything that I need them to be, and they're not 100% invested in me, and I'm not 100% invested in them, then I've lost that battle. And it again, it you know, I hate to hear the word my people, my people, my people, my people. These people are my coworkers. I go to different conferences all over the nation. I go to different assessments, and I do different things for different fire departments. And the biggest thing that I hate to hear is, I've got a guy that does this. I've got a guy that does that. Well, at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of you to mitigate that. It's the responsibility of the fire chief to take care of that situation. You know what happens within the walls of a firehouse? Manifestation. If we allow things to manifest, then it becomes a big issue. So if a fire chief is not connected with his people, he's not a fire chief. It's that simple. We can work on paperwork all day long. We can sit here and say, nope, I don't have time for you today. I might get with you next week. Well, what happens over time? Lest we forget, right? We forget. We forget that this person took time out of their day. They may even come in on their day off. If they have an issue that needs to be addressed, of course, we work through the chain of command. But at the end of the day, if I hear there's a problem, I'm gonna go to the top leader, that individual took it to. And I just want to know. I want to know what we're doing wrong. I want to know what we can do right. But I'm in a fortunate position to where we don't get many complaints. And I think it comes down to, and I'm not taking credit for that by any means. The people that work with me, they deserve all that credit. But you have to be connected. If you're going to take the role of a fire chief, whether you were nominated, whether you had to go through an assessment, whether you were put in that position as from your city administrator, county council, county administrator, whatever that situation is, something in your mind had to say, hey, I'm going to do this job and I'm going to do it right. And there are fire chiefs out there that are so arrogant that they put themselves in a position where they're up on this pedestal. And what we see a lot of times is those are the types of fire chiefs that got their degrees in business administration. Well, that has nothing to do with what goes on that floor. Absolutely nothing. I think the guys that work their way up through the ranks are the guys that can really make a difference because they understand where these people are coming from. They understand where your coworkers are coming from. And that to me is the biggest difference. You know, I'm going to take experience any day of the week over a degree. And I'm not knocking degrees, I'm not bashing degrees, but a business degree, it's not doing anything for you in the fire service unless all you are there to do is make sure you're jotting down, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, making sure your Excel format is in the way it's supposed to be. You've got to handle your budget, but you know what? You can handle your budget and your coworkers at the same time. It's all about what you're willing to put into it. It's easy to walk away at 5 o'clock. I can't tell you the last time I left this fire station at 5 o'clock. I mean, this job is something you take home with you. If you don't get it done during the day, you know what? Take a few hours in the evening and make sure you get it done. Make sure you have time for your family. You know, my kids are grown. They're gone. My baby, he's a senior at Clemson. And, you know, we're empty nesters. I'm a granddad. But at the same time, I make time for this family and I make time for my family. And again, after 31 years of marriage, she's come pretty used to, you know, dealing with that. So if you're going to be a fire chief, remember the word fire. Remember the word fire. That's what you are. You're a
Yes,
fire chief.
sir. Couldn't have said it any better, Chief. Awesome. Awesome. With that being said, I want to ask, what is your opinion on the word aggressive?
Aggressive. Oh man. So you can take that word and it just depends on how you want to look at it. So let's take that word aggressive. And you know, we look at as a senior officer, as a company officer, there are guys out there that are wild, cowboy. You know, matter of fact, one of our shirts, you know, we have a cowboy on the back of it. You know, it says Pride of the West Side. But here's the thing. Honestly, we are aggressive. We're extremely aggressive. And let me tell you why. I'm the type of guy I don't like to lose. If I'm the IC, if I get the opportunity to be out there and I'm the incident commander and I have passed this down to my senior staff is I don't like to lose that battle. If we pull up on a 1800, 2200 square foot house and we got room and contents burning, I don't want to go any further. I don't like to lose. I don't like to lose the battle. But you got to understand too, though, you know, let's go back to the old cliche. You know, we risk a little to save a little, we risk a lot to save a lot. And sometimes freelancing can obviously be a problem, but you know, freelancing all comes back down to the incident commander, strong leadership within the organization, not allowing it to happen. That's how things and how people get in trouble. So, you know, aggressiveness is something that is instilled in each individual. You know, you are going to have some yard breathers that are just going to stand there and kind of keep out of their way, out of your way, and just kind of make sure that they see you doing the bare minimum. And you're going to have guys standing right beside you saying, hey, I want to go back. I want to go back in. I need to go back in. I need to pass on this information to them because just because they want to get back in into the building. So when you take aggressiveness, it's all about what your culture has created. So, there's always going to be a broad spectrum of being aggressive. There's a broad spectrum because we create that. We create that spectrum. And you have to find a happy medium in that spectrum. So we have to meet in the middle and understand that, obviously if we pull up on something that is absolutely not obtainable, all right. But if I know there's a survivability profile for anybody that may be in that building, we're going to do everything we can. But again, aggressiveness comes down to the officer in charge, the officer running operations. Are they reading the building? Are they reading smoke? What is the building doing? What is our guys doing? Are we making headway? And at some point, yes, you do have to call off the dogs. You have to bring everybody out and do what you have to do. But here's the deal. When you signed up for this job, it don't matter if you had experience or if you didn't have experience. You have to understand that you're in a position to where the people come first. And our mission statement here is as simple as it can get. Our mission statement clearly says for them. And that's what we focus on. So aggressiveness can be thrown all over the park. It again, if the company officers in the IC is making great decisions, aggressiveness should be based off of those decisions. Those decisions will dictate if we're moving in the right direction or if we're moving in the wrong direction. Do we have to hit the reset button? If we hit that button and we have to start all over again, well, then you're starting another form. It may not be the form that you originally wanted, as far as your tactics and your strategies and objectives that we're trying to meet on the fire ground. When you take aggressiveness, it again, you have to focus on what matters. You have to focus on what's important. Everybody here understands that their job is something that could end their life. Their job is something that they understand that they're willing to risk that to do that or to accomplish those tasks. Now, it all comes down to what we've done before. We're in a pretty good area to where, our pre-fire planning and our incident planning is really in a good position to where these guys are going out and they're pre-fire fire planning these buildings. Of course, we're not going to be able to pre-fire plan a single residential building, but we kind of know the layout. We know how that building's going to react. Is it new construction? Is it old construction? We know we have more time in a little bit older built building as far as what we're building nowadays, which is a house that comes in prefabricated and you've got 15 minutes to make a decision, as opposed to houses that were built in the 70s and 80s or 50s that you have 30, 45 minutes to do good, solid work. So aggressiveness relies back on, are we going to be able to do solid work? Are we going to be able to enter into that environment? And then you have to take into consideration that, is it worth what we're doing? So we have to go back and it, I don't micromanage. And I'm not going to put myself in that position. But we do have SOGs that we have to abide by because we write SOGs as opposed to SOPs because I need a guideline. It just says, hey, I can vary from this. The chief will allow me to vary from this to make a decision if these guys are going back in or if we're or we're bringing them out. So I think aggressiveness is thrown across the fire service. Mainly because you have a lot of younger guys there again, sitting there watching YouTube videos all day as opposed to getting out and doing it. I've been in positions when I was a younger firefighter where I was pushing my face across the floor to be able to get away from the heat. That's about as aggressive as you can get. And, in my career, I've been fortunate enough to make grabs and make successful grabs. And also in my career, you've brought out people that obviously didn't make it. But one of the things that I feel like is because we're kind of seeing lesser volume of structure fires, these guys throw out aggressiveness and they don't truly understand what it really means. So to me, being aggressive, let me tell you what aggressive means to me is. If we pull up on a fire alarm at a warehouse or in industry, and there's nothing showing, but my guys have already laid 1,500 feet of 5-inch, they've already laddered the building, they've already put up the tower, they got lines stretched. That to me is aggressive. Aggressive is taking the opportunity, even if nothing's showing. Even not, you've cleared the building, everything is good. Aggressive to me means that they did everything they were supposed to and they were ready to get off that rig and do exactly what they were supposed to do. Aggressive means to me they went ahead and hooked to that hydrant, they flushed the hydrant, they did everything they could to turn that one fire alarm, whether it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning, they turned that one fire alarm into a 3-hour training evolution before they come back. That to me is aggressive.
Amen. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And with that stated, what's your take on the safety side?
Well, when you look at safety, unfortunately, safety is almost something that, it kind of goes along with liability. When you're in the fire service, you can take liability and throw it out the window. That's the way I look at it. And we put ourselves in a position where a lot of times we say, because of liability purposes, we're not going to do our job. Because of liability purposes, we could be sued. Because of liability purposes, it may cost us money. So the way I look at it is, if I've got enough manpower, I'm absolutely going to put somebody on safety. But a safety-minded person has to understand that operations still have to continue. Operations have to take place. We have to complete those tasks. I will tell you this, if I've got a safety officer radioing to me every minute or every 45 seconds that we've got an issue over here, issue over there, you know what's going to eventually happen? As a fire chief, I'm going to zone that safety officer out. I'm just going to tune him out altogether. And there are some of those folks that want to be able to play that role as safety. But if you're going to play that role, you have to understand that we are there to complete a job. We are there to complete the task that these folks deserve to have us there. These folks deserve to have somebody in that building with them getting ready to mitigate a situation that is the worst day of their life. Safety is a great thing, but safety can also be overemphasized. Ladder bailouts. We've had people trained that, during ladder bailouts, we've had broken shoulders, we've had broken legs. Those things happen. Now, do we abide by everything that was done or supposed to be done as far as our safety and our SOGs? We absolutely did, but sometimes we do make mistakes. But in most instances, a safety officer is somebody that don't really want to be involved in the situation. They want to have the hat on that says, "Hey, make sure you got your gloves on when you're pulling hose. Hey, make sure your chin strap's tight." You know what? I'm not that kind of guy. I do stress. I will stress about having gloves on pulling hose because when workman's comp, coming back to a cut in your thumb. But I think overall, you have to look at the big picture. The big picture means a safety officer has to understand what the objectives are, the task that has to be completed. And I do understand that there are some concerns there, but you also have to know that it goes back to the point of understanding who your company officers are, understanding who your IC is, understanding your chief leadership to know that, first of all, they're not going to put those their people, their guys, their coworkers in a position to where if they feel like it is immediately dangerous. Can situations change? Absolutely. The fire ground is ever evolving. All right. So a big part of that communication or safety is communicating what's going on inside of the box. If we know what's going on inside of the box, we're getting true communication from who's in there doing the work. Then that can put the mind in the ease of the safety officer, that can put the mind at ease of the incident commander. So when you take a safety officer, you got to put all those things into play. You got to put you, they've got to understand that without every check mark being made, it is gonna present a problem for a guy who's over safety. But again, at the end of the day, I'm just gonna be straightforward with you. We're there to do the job. It's that simple.
Okay, love the answer. Cannot debate you on that one. Realistic training on a small budget. I'm not sure what your budget is for Lugoff, but what kind of training do you bring to your members, and are you in favor of outside training?
We are very aggressive on training. I'm gonna throw that word out there again. I think training is our strongest suit here at this fire department. We have a fantastic training officer, and we have a fantastic battalion chief that's over special ops. And sometimes I have to pull a rein back on him a little bit because I mean he can really get in there and push guys to the limit. So what we see is, we look at low frequency, high consequence events. We look at high frequency, low consequence events. And we train for all of those things. And by doing that, I mean, just as I mentioned earlier, we had a ship shoulder issue. We had a belay line on a window bell out. The belay line on the harness, safety harness, had a little bit too much slack in it. And the guy on the belay, he caught the guy right before he hit the ground, but it did allow a substantial injury. Training, I will say this. In my budget, training is probably fourth or fifth in my line item to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. So we do bring in outside training. Captain Dozier, he's coming in September to present for this entire county and surrounding counties. We're paying for that. So I will tell you this, our guys have to get in at least 6 hours a day of training. And I know that sounds like a lot. So, a lot of that comes back into meeting ISO standards. But I'll put aside the ISO standards as opposed to being prepared for the job that you're going to be rung out for at any time. Our training is substantial. I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm proud of here within this organization is the fact that we have guys that are willing. It doesn't matter if it's 95 degrees outside or 55 degrees outside that are ready to get it done. I can walk out there this time of year. It's 98 degrees here, man, 100% humidity. And they're out there pulling lines off the rig in full gear. I look at all these videos all the time, guys showing how they do a load, a hose load, how they deploy a hose load and all this stuff. And what I look at is these guys are deploying hose loads with just gloves on. Well, you know what? Why don't you get in bunker gear? Why don't you put that air pack on? Why don't you put your face piece on? Why don't you mask up? Why don't you try pulling that hose at that point and show us how easy your new hose load is that is going to take over the world. We do it realistically. Our training is as realistic as you can get without being in that actual environment. We prepare for battle. It's just that simple. If I have to go over budget on training, I'm gonna go over it. That's a line item that I'll go red in if I have to. And that's not gonna change. My bosses have figured out that if that line item's in the red, it's in the red because of a reason. It's in the red because we spent too much money on training. It's in the red because I need more money for training. So, honestly, if I'm requiring 6 hours out of your 24-hour day to get your training done, and I accept absolutely no excuses as to why. If these guys get their turn, if they're running all day and they're up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning to make sure they make their 6 hours, I don't get a single complaint because they know they've got to do it. They've got to make sure they have the skill set ready for that next call that comes in. It's just that simple.
Standards. You hold your men and women to a standard.
Absolutely. And the great thing about it is, Nanny, is even if the battalion chief of training doesn't present out the most fabulous topics for the week or for the day, I get guys coming in here every day saying, "Hey, chief, let's look at doing this. I would love to be able to train on this. Do we have the budget for this? Do we have the budget for that? Can we go out and work on swift water rescue today? Can we go to the river and work on swift water? Can we go out? Can we go to our training center today? Can we do what we have to do?" And they're bringing all these ideas that somebody who's now been sitting in the fire chief's office for 7 years, man, I lose a little bit of that edge. You know what I'm saying? I lose a little bit of that. Don't get me wrong. I love getting out there with them. A lot of times I like to get out there with them just so I can show them up. But most of the time, if a guy presents me an issue, or a training topic, or a training evolution, or a new way to do it, that makes my day, man. It makes me enthusiastic because now I know that not only are they doing it, but they're putting a spin on it that can open up a whole nother door for how we do things. And if I don't allow that to come into my office, then I'm just a CEO.
With that being said, I remember before we got this interview scheduled, you mentioned how you guys have like a required, a mandated PT regimen every day you're on shift. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's correct. So in the mornings after pass down, after they get the trucks checked, every shift is required to do an hour to an hour and a half of CrossFit training. Our guys, listen, if you're going to be in this job, you know as well as I do because I watch you work out. If you're going to be in this job, you have to be prepared physically and mentally. I can prepare you as hard as I can mentally. You can prepare yourself as hard as you can mentally. But what sits out there on an apparatus floor, which is approximately $175,000 worth of workout equipment, we're going to utilize that equipment because your physical fitness is something you absolutely 100% can control. And it has completely changed this fire department when I implemented that program. So, the first part of that program, guys came to me and said, "Hey, I'm not really into CrossFit. I'm a weightlifter. I like to lift weights." Well, that's great, man. I'm glad you can throw up a lot of weight. I'm glad that, when I need you there to be Incredible Hulk, you can do those things. But what about your cardio side of things? A weightlifter can do fantastic things, but when do they give out? When are they spent? We need that cardio portion of it. So I have a health and fitness coordinator. That works every third day, but he puts out the workout for every shift for every morning. And that workout continues for the week. And Danny B, let me tell you something, man. Some of those things I would be probably throwing up within the first 15 or 20 minutes of that workout because it's different for us.
Right, right.
I'm doing the same thing they are. I may not reach their level, and I'm certainly not going to do it in the time frame they can, but we work out as well. But the difference between us as command staff is that means I got to do it 5 days a week. These guys are doing it every third day. So we have to, our fitness coordinator kind of tones ours back a little bit to be able to keep us in shape. But I don't expect them to do anything I'm not going to do. But they are required. They have to complete an hour and a half of workouts every day. most guys, I can come in sometimes. And I'll stop by maybe in the evening just to check in on the guys, see how they're doing, maybe steal a little bit of dinner from them. But I see guys when I pull up here at 6 or 7 o'clock at night, they're doing their second workout for the day because they felt like they didn't get enough in the morning. And a lot of times, of course, if you catch runs during your workout time frame, then that takes your mindset off of what you were doing. You're already in gear. Now you're having to come back and finish up. They know they have to complete that workout. So if they were 30 minutes in, they still owe this department another hour. And they do it. Now I will tell you this, when we first started, man, there was some complaints. They were like, man, we really don't know, how this is going to work out for us. And this is a tough spot, Chief. I don't get a single complaint now. Not one. It has changed the mindset and our physical ability within this organization that has put us at top tier. And I'll put our guys against anybody any day of the week.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic, Chief. Trying to figure out here. Before we close this interview, is there anything you want to say to anybody out there that may be struggling, whether it's the department wise, crew shift, anything of that nature?
I will say this, I think we all struggle at times. There's a lot of issues that we face, whether it's a monetary issue, whether it's some PTSD, whether we have problems at home, addiction. That's a huge issue for first responders, and we're seeing it on the highest level that we've ever seen. We have programs out there to be able to take care of these situations, but this is what I would say. To the guy, to the girl, there is avenues that you can take to make sure that you're in a mental capacity, in a mental state that keeps you focused on the job you dreamt of having. I don't know about you, Danny, but I can remember my first interview as to become a career guy. I don't think I slept for 2 or 3 days. I was so nervous. But I was so excited at the same time because I knew I had an opportunity sitting in front of me. And I think a lot of times what we forget when we're struggling, when we're having those issues, is all the times that we looked through when we were getting hired, when we were getting promoted, all the stuff we put our body through to get to where we were. It's so easy to give up. It's extremely easy to give up when you can choose to fight. When you can choose, if your body is still physically able to do the job that you dreamt of. A lot of times you hear the saying, don't forget about the things you prayed for yesterday that you have today. And I think a lot of times we overlook that in the fire service. We forget that how hard we worked 5 years ago to get to where we need to be. We forget how hard we worked 10 years ago to get this job. Take time to confide in somebody that you can trust. Take time to confide in somebody that has mentored you. And hopefully you are in a position to where you've had that mentor, where you've had that leader that can put you in a place that brings you back to where you were when you first joined. Don't forget the job is the job. And try to make the good days outweigh the bad days. And it's all about our mental focus, how we focus on what we plan on doing for that day. How can we compartmentalize the issues that we face, the demons that we face, the struggles that we face? Because there's so many different ways out of it. But again, Danny, I'm coming back to it comes down to the people you are surrounding by. For
Yes.
me, I look at the people in your circle within your department. Of course, you're going to have your outside circle. Your outside circle don't understand what you're going through daily. They may understand bits and pieces of it, but 95% of the time, it relates back to the job that we have signed up for. Some people are able to make it through that storm, and some are not. And I'm not downing anybody that can't make it. If it's to the point to where you need that break, If you need something else in life, then you have to go and seek it. You know, I tell guys every day, you know, you've got to do what's best for you, what's best for your family, what's best for your future, what's best for you mentally, physically. But to know and understand when you enter into this job, there is going to be some bad days. And it's all about the mindset. What do you allow to affect you mentally? And understand that there's so many avenues now that can mitigate that situation. It to me, when you choose public service, there's a lot of issues there. You know, you're not choosing, you know, the best thing in the world unless it's right here. If it's not in your heart, you don't belong in this job, man. You just don't. And your heart can take a pounding, it can take a beating, and it all goes with that mental capacity. I can't tell you how many times my heart's been broke, you know, not because of, you know, a romantic thing, but my heart's been broke many a times for what we face in this job. My heart breaks for the people that I see struggling. My heart breaks for the people that I see that have lost their life, you know. But the biggest thing is what we have to focus on at the end of the day is you have to stay strong mentally, but you have to be able to express yourself in a way that you feel comfortable. You have to be able to express yourself in a way that you may not feel comfortable. And you have to be able to express yourself in a way that you can understand what people and the information they're trying to provide to you. And you may have to dissect that. You may have to take bits and pieces of what this person told you and put it with what this person tells you and kind of form what you think is best for you. Because at the end of the day, you are the one that makes the ultimate decision.
No, that's real. I mean, that's definitely well spoken. Well spoken, Chief. You got to have it here. And yeah, that inner circle. Try to find, to me, it's all about trying to find like-minded individuals that get you, because you know as well as I do, not everybody's going to get your level of passion and enthusiasm in the fire service. We have people that are just here for the benefits, paycheck collectors, here to do the bare minimum. As long as they're meeting the bare minimum, they're okay with that. But you got to find those individuals that you want to emulate. So that was very well said, Chief. I want to thank you, Chief, seriously, for coming on, man, accepting this invite, taking the time out of your day to do this. This was awesome. I love talking to fire chiefs that have that aggressive mindset, but first and foremost, the chiefs that never forget why they're here in the first place. And you are an example of that for sure.
Well, I appreciate you having me, Danny, man. Your podcast is great. I'm loving it. I love listening to it, man. I think you're well on your way to the top, man. And again, I think what you're doing is great. I love the fact that you're willing to listen to the guy at the bottom and listen to the guy at the top. And you know, I just love the way you put yourself out there. You're doing a fantastic job, brother. And thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Chief. I really appreciate it. And Chief Floyd was the hookup for this. Chief Floyd, if you're listening, thank you for being the plug on getting Chris, talking to him and getting him to come on board, Chief. I appreciate you, Chief. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Danny.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.